Okay, thank you. Good morning, everyone, and good afternoon to those of you who are on the East Coast. Today, we have Lori Hudson and Lawrence H. Butterfield, Jr. presenting Going Paperless and Compliance Issues Involved. I'd like to remind everybody to keep yourself on mute if during the presentation. If you have any comments or questions, please direct that in the chat box. We will get to that at the very end. Before we get started, I'd like to tell you a little bit about Lori Hudson. She's the owner of Hudson Law Offices in Turnsville, New Jersey, a practice she founded over 23 years ago. The Hudson Law Office solely concentrates on creditors' rights and collection law. Ms. Hudson was also admitted to the New Jersey and Pennsylvania bars in 1989 after attending Rutgers Law School in Camden, New Jersey, where she graduated with honors. She's a member of the New Jersey State Bar Association, the New Jersey Creditors Bar Association, the IACC, and has been a member of the CLLA since 1997. She sat on the Education Committee and was an attorney member of the Eastern Region. And something you may not know is that since 2006, Ms. Hudson has been president of the Road Company Theater Group, a regional nonprofit theater company that owns the historical Grand Theater in Williamstown, New Jersey. She was a recipient of a Lifetime Achievement Award from the New Jersey Act for her work in the arts community and also received a 2016 Encore Award from the South Jersey Cultural Alliance for her dedication and involvement in the arts. Lawrence Butterfield Jr., which everyone knows as Larry Butterfield, has been involved in the credit and collection industry for 45 years. Currently, he is president of two companies. The first company is called Specialized Attorney Services, Inc., and the other company is AI Legal Solutions, Inc. SAS is a full-service process servicing company, and the AI Legal uses artificial intelligence to provide document preparation and e-filing services. Butterfield is also president of LBNLN Company Limited. And this is something very interesting about Larry that's not with the collection industry, but this company owns two farms in Tanzania growing avocados and cashews, utilizing sustainable farming techniques. LBNLN also grows corn, beans, and corn, as well as other food store and all, as well as store food for later distribution. Larry's also an avid reader, enjoys sports, especially University of Louisville athletics, and volunteers his time, money, and talents to a number of organizations in his hometown of Louisville. Welcome, everyone, and you can begin.
Thank you.
Oh, Larry, you're on mute.
Larry, you were going to give the first prompt? I think Larry's still on mute. I'll get started while Larry's trying to get off of mute. Hi, everyone. Thank you for attending the program. As Britt said, Larry and I are going to be talking about going paperless and the compliance issues involved. So just a little introduction. Does your office shelves look like this? Are you literally overflowing with files and swimming in a sea of paper? Are you actually paying people to cart files back and forth to your office and then putting them back on the shelves? Is this you looking for your own files? Have you had enough? Well, in this seminar, and I'm trying to get to the next screen, going paperless is actually easier than you think. When I was a young attorney, there's no such thing as having a paperless office. There were literally stacks and stacks of files all over every single square foot of the law firm that I worked for. They actually employed 2 to 3 file clerks that would run files from office to office to office. So when I started my firm, that's the only thing that I knew is that you had paper files when claims came in, which they, at that time, all arrived hard copy. You would open up a physical file. You would put pleadings on one side, documents on another side, discovery in its own clip, and things like that. It wasn't until the late 90s, early 2000, 2001, when my office expanded and I actually took over and bought the condo that's situated next door. And we broke through and we actually created a whole file room and we actually invested money in a filing system, a metal one that was floor to ceiling with those big, big cranks that you would crank so you could fit as many paper files on that. 2 years later, after we bought that, I decided that I think it's time for us to go paperless. So this seminar will give you a little idea of how you can do that in your office. And then Larry Butterfield will touch upon the compliance issues that are involved with going paperless. Some of the pros, obviously, to going paperless, as you can see in this slide, is there's a clutter-free work environment. It's almost like cleaning out your, like doing some spring cleaning or cleaning out your closet. Like afterwards, you feel like a sense of like a weight has been lifted off your shoulders. And I think it bolsters productivity in your office. So before I actually get started, this little legal disclaimer, I'm not putting myself out there as being the expert on how to take your office or agency paperless. I can only give you an example of how I did it. So my legal disclaimer is that this presentation is just for educational and hopefully entertainment purposes only. but you should definitely seek independent professional help with your IT people or with an attorney or whatever for you to do it in your office. And I also realize that a seminar like this may have come like 5 to 10 years too late. I think most people that are on this call or that are participating in the CLLA convention this time are probably paperless. But you would be really surprised that a lot of my adversaries, when they call me, and I said, oh, wait a second, let me just pull that file up. They're like, oh, okay, do you want to call me back? And I said, no, I just have to get to another screen. I'm paperless. Everything is on my computer. And some of them are astonished or they're like biting the bullet as to themselves going paperless. So I think it's really doable, and I wouldn't have it any other way. My staff is so much more productive since we have gone paperless. So this slide represents a chart of why people don't want to change. And this is a percentage of employees when asked specific questions as to why they don't want to change. And Larry actually gave me this chart, and the source for this chart is at the end of our presentation. So 47% of the employees, when asked why they don't want to go paperless, is they claim that management is holding them back. It's like they do, but management is stuck in the tried and true ways of having physical files and physical papers in their hands. 44% of employees say that, things require a physical signature, so I need the actual paper in front of me. But we all learned on the first day when Lorna and Wanda gave their presentation that's not true anymore. Like, there's the Electronic Signatures Act, and everything can be digitally signed, and so that's really not a good excuse anymore. 43% said that they prefer paper. 40% said that they don't get it. They don't get the technology behind going paperless. 29% of employees state that, well, there's a lot of paper coming in, so what do we do with this paper? 23%, like Joe Marino mentioned before we started this seminar, is that obviously you need specific documents for evidence, for trial or arbitrations. And then 18% of the employees state that going paperless is actually disruptive to the flow or how they handle their day-to-day duties or activities. So the first thing that my office did And at the end of the seminar, if you could just save your questions or comments to the end. And I encourage you to share how you did it in your agency or law firm. The first thing that we did was that you have to organize. You really just got to get down and organize. You have to know what each employee in your office is doing. And then cross-train at least two people on the same task. For my office, we set up our structure, and I'm sure this is different in every office and every agency. Some offices may segregate their work per employee by the alphabet. Some may do it like I do it, is like certain people handle the mail, certain people handle filing the complaint, certain people handle getting the default judgment, certain people handle contested litigation, and then certain people handle post-judgment and executions. So it's really important up front when you're organizing is to know exactly what your employees are doing and how they're doing it. When we first started, back in January 1st, 2006 is when my office went paperless. I had everybody in the office make outlines of exactly what they do and how they do it. So it was easy to cross-train people on certain things. Obviously, if people go on vacation or something, you want somebody to be able to step in and do that person's daily job and routines. We definitely, like calling debtors, sending legal judgments and things like that. It's important that you know exactly who is doing what in your office and how, and you need to cross train your people. So the next slide is, for example, who is handling the incoming mail? So when you're first going paperless, obviously in the old days, somebody would open the mail, they would time stamp it with that big, they change the date and they stamp it, and then they would two-prong it or prong it on the side and put it in each file. But first they would have to find the file. If somebody was using it, no, I have to pull it because I have to put the mail. Now it's so much easier. When the mail comes in, whoever's handling the mail, they just simply scan it and diary it, put it into the system, diary it for whoever is supposed to follow up, and then they shred it. And it's important that they shred it. The next thing is, again, who's handling, for another example, is who's handling the new claims that are coming into your office. Some of the claims, obviously, most of my forwarders now are sending me everything electronically, via email or an EDI download from my software system, or I pick it up on their ShareFile site or something like that. A lot of clients, though, agencies that send me work are still sending me hard paper via fax or they mail it to me. So it's important to know who in your office is handling this type of data that's coming into your office, who's scrubbing the claims, meaning, who's making sure it's in statute, there's no bankruptcies and things like that, who's reviewing the claim, what attorneys are reviewing the claims before they open, who's making sure the documents are there to substantiate the claim, just like the last program that we had, they talked about documentation. Is really important. And then who's actually opening the claims into your system. So for the hard actual paper that's coming in, you need, again, to scan it and shred it. Obviously, if it's original documents that you need to have a system that you do actually save those originals. But can I tell you, that's few and far between in my office. We handle, just like everybody here, thousands of files a year. And I very rarely get an original document that I need to save hard paper of. So it's important that you utilize systems or set up systems in your office as to who's handling all this data that is coming in. Okay, you also need to set up policies, again, for like court downloads, how you handle emails. How are you handling other electronic data that's coming into your office? And then how are you sharing that data throughout your office? So in my office, what we did is that we created, again, one person handles all of the court downloads that comes from, it's e-courts in New Jersey. Everything's electronic through the state of New Jersey. So anything that I file or anything that I'm getting, notifications that I'm getting from the court or anything that my adversaries are filing with the court on a particular matter, I always get a notification and I can download that directly through e-courts off of the court's system. So I have a specific person in my office that constantly throughout the day will check the e-courts website and gets those downloads. And then that person in my office will decide, okay, is it what's being filed? Is it just a confirmation that we filed something? Okay, that's not something that an attorney needs to see. They have already been trained. My staff has already been trained to know what an attorney needs to see and what an attorney does not need to see. And it's just basically a confirmation of a filing or something. But if it is something that another person, like a paralegal or another attorney or myself needs to handle, they will put in our diary codes. It's easily to, for that other person to check their diary codes and get whatever has been downloaded from the courts. For email, we have a policy in my office that, emails are handled just like any other correspondence that might come in on a file, such as a fax or a hard copy letter that comes through the mail. Every single email needs to be printed to our collection software system, every single one, so that anybody else that is handling the file can see how someone else has updated the file. And it kind of happens in real time because some people may be in one file, the same file at the same time, but, oh, okay, Carolyn, you know, my paralegal has just given the forwarder agency an update, so I don't need to respond to that. So you can see it, and it's really easy, and it frees up a lot of time in your office if everybody is on a system that they can see and share. But it's really important to train your staff to make sure that they are following the correct procedures into following the protocol, I should say, into downloading everything, putting it in the file, diarying it for the right person. If everybody's not doing that, then the system kind of falls apart. Okay, so the next slide is that in my office, and I'm sure this happens in many offices across the, you know, for everybody that's watching, is that I break down duties, like I said, and I put folders on my server. I don't allow any of my employees or staff to save things to their hard drive, to their C drive, to their computer. Everything is on the network. So to go paperless, I would think that you would need, and obviously, a computer network there where everybody has their own computer in their office, but the server is in another room, and all of your data files exist on that server. So, and that's everything. From my own, like if I keep my own forms or my own pleadings that I utilize again or my own research or whatever, that is all on the server and anybody in the office can access that. So each employee, so I've created this outline of folders on my server and each employee knows what folders they need to look at. So they're like, for example, we, in our office, we call them do-bys, meaning, this file, I need you to do by this date. So we call them do-bys. So, and each employee in my office knows what folders that they have to look at. So, for example, if an answer comes in, an answer and a counterclaim comes in, of course I will review it, and I will put in, there's actually an answer counterclaim folder on my server, which I will create a Word document, and I will say, okay, here's this file number, particular file number, the date that I want the, what I'm going to be telling whoever is handling that matter to do it by, and then the date that I put it in there. So, and then I will put, okay, I need you to send, you know, an answer letter to the forwarder telling them this, and then I'll summarize what the counterclaim is and that they have such and such in days to respond. So that will go in the answer and counterclaim folder that exists on my network, on my server. And then my paralegal, Carolyn Lafferty, everybody had pretty much on this call probably has met her. I bring her to the conventions. She is in charge of handling the answers and counterclaims that come into the office. So she'll go into that folder on a daily basis, and she obviously can prioritize what she needs to do by the dates of when I need things done. And that's why we call them due by dates. So she'll obviously pull up the ones that need to be done now, and she'll do whatever on the paper. And then when she's done, she prints the due by to the folder. She prints whatever she does to the folder. And into our collection software. And then, you know, she sends out the status of the forwarder, response to the counterclaim or whatever to the court, and everything gets uploaded and gets put into our collection software. So again, I don't allow any data to sit on any individual's hard drive because we are backing up the server. We're not backing up each individual's computer. We also set up diary systems, obviously, and work queues. So we set up diary systems in our collection software where everybody every day logs in and pulls up their diary for that day. Some people call them queues. Some software calls them queues. Some software calls them diary system. So there's a diary system and diary numbers for myself for certain functions like, okay, default judgments, getting filing your judgment package or sending out writs of execution or bank levies, things like that. And everybody knows what diaries they have to look up. Have to handle every day. So, and that's something that I require my staff to do on a daily basis is pull your diary, pull your work cues, and get done what you need to get done. And then obviously if work needs to be prioritized, they come see me or they come see Carolyn the paralegal to prioritize the work. But for the most part, since we went paperless, my employees are very efficient on what they have to do, when they have to do it, and it gets done. And it really makes the office flow that much easier being paperless because everybody's not sitting around waiting for the files to come to them so that they can actually do the work. So this has actually forced our employees to adopt a clean desk policy to get ready for the transition. And as just a little funny anecdote, little story. I was actually it was before COVID. I can't believe how time is flying. But before COVID, we were hiring another legal assistant to help us out because we were busy and we needed somebody. And the person that actually started with us really only lasted a day or so because I don't think that person could grasp that we were a paperless environment. We didn't have we weren't holding onto files or papers and that we had to check our diaries, check our due by folders on our server every single day. And she actually said to Pam, who's one of my legal assistants, cause Pam was training her. She said, we do this every day. Every day. So that has been like a joke. You know, Pam often comes into my office. Laurie, do I need to do this every day? And I'm like, yes, Pam, you need to do this every day. So that was just a little funny. So the
hey,
first
Laurie,
thing, I'm sorry.
Laurie,
go ahead.
I'd like to do the first prompt.
Okay.
This is a replica of a Everlast boxing glove that I received when I was a board member at the Muhammad Ali Museum. So that's our first prompt. Thank you.
Thanks, Eric. Obviously, getting all of your outlines and learning how your what employees are doing what, and organizing your server, organizing your folders and your diary codes and everything like that is one half of the equation. The other half of the equation is getting your tech requirements in place. And what that means is your hardware and then your software. So I'm not going to tell you what vendors to use or what software to use. I can only tell you what I use. So get your tech requirements in place before your start date. So you need a computer network, like I said, which consist of a server and then your client computers throughout your office. Everybody should have a scanner who is scanning in work hooked up to their own client computer. I don't have a scanner, but my copy machine, and that's kind of going way of the dodo bird now too, the copy machine, we hardly ever use it. But it also has a capability of scanning. So when I need to scan something, I go to the copy machine. Or all my legal assistants, they have their own scanners hooked up with their own printers and everything right at their desk. And then you need a shredder. I personally don't have a shredder in my office. I hire a third-party company, Iron Mountain, to do my shredding. And the reason I like to use them is because they give me a certification as to what they're shredding. So I keep that certification. They come every week to my office. They empty the locked bins that are in my office where I put all my paper, and they take it out and they give me a certification that it was shredded on such and such a day. Everybody in my office has two trash cans by their desk. It might seem obvious or mundane or something, but one is obviously for trash, and the other one is for any document that you are using or wanting to shred in the in the course of the day. And what that means is anything. I mean, I don't care if it's a post-it note or you're writing a file number on it, or you're taking notes while you're on a phone call or something, everything goes into the shred bin. And the trash can is really just for my napkins from my lunch or my tea bags or things like that. Everything else goes into my shredder. And then every day I take my trash can, or somebody takes my trash can, shredder trash can, and takes it up to the locked bin in my office to await my shredding company to come every week to take it and shred it and give me that certificate. As far as scanners are concerned, I don't know the names of the scanners off the top of my head. If people want to email me, I will be glad to give you that information. So another is the software involved. So you need your computer and your software IT people involved. So I utilize Collection Master. I've been using it since I first pretty much started as an attorney all those years ago. And I use, for my imaging software, I use VMedia. So Collection Master was bought out by Verticon. So everything is housed under there. And I know that they have other platforms for collection software and imaging software, but I use VMedia and Collection Master. And again, I told you what my shredding vendor was. And initially, when you first get started, you're going to have some file storage and destruction company. If you can't do it on your own, you need a third-party company. And I did utilize a company that was secure around where my office is. It was called Tri-State Archives. Basically, I didn't scan in all my old files. What I did was that I started my paper files, and my paperless files were like a hybrid until the paper files kind of became obsolete or those files were over. Then I stored those files at my third-party place. And then when they came up for destruction, you know, several years later, every state has a different time period of how long you need to hold on to your files. We destroy them, and you should destroy them when your destruction date comes up. So some people, that when they go paperless, they told me that it took them such a long time because they scanned in all of their old files. It was easier for me because I did it. And what I did was, on my software, I just put in a priority note for every single file starting January 1st, 2006, that I was going to, the rest of this file is paperless. So you would see after that date all of the pleadings or everything in your collection software, because it was scanned in with your imaging software. Where before the January 1st, 2006 date, you would have to still pull the hard file. And for like a year, you know, year and a half, some files lingered longer, but you would have to go back and forth. So it was a process, but eventually, I would say about a year and a half, 2 years in, we were totally paperless, and most of our physical files were offsite and being stored waiting for the destruction date. And as of today, I have no more physical files. They have all been destroyed because they've passed their the time period for when I was required to hold on to that. All right, I'm getting up to the end, and I want to give Larry as much time as I had. So just very quickly, again, train your staff, train your staff. So when the time is ready to start, start. So you have to stick to your start date. And from January 1st or whatever date you pick, don't go back. Don't let your employees secretly print out files or not post things to the files. Make sure you're putting diary dates behind almost every single file initially to make sure and monitor your staff as to if they are following the right protocol as to putting everything into your system the way they should be. To maintain a paperless office, it's easy. Once your system is working, it's just like these gears on this slide. It runs really, really well, like a watch. You just have to manually check and make sure your diary dates and all your scans are in the right place. If you're coming across files where somebody made a mistake and put a wrong file number in when they were scanning something in, you just have to say, okay, put this in the right file or whatever. And again, you periodically have to train your staff and do little tune-ups. Obviously, sometimes when you initially start making your policy or procedures, you can't foresee every situation. So you need to tune up your own policies and procedures and readjust things. But make sure that everybody in your office is on the same policy and procedures and are following the same outlines that you're doing. Pretty much the last thing that I want to go with is that you have to constantly monitor your server and your network. This is your lifeblood, obviously. You don't have paper files to rely on. So you have to make sure that your IT people are in place if you don't have them on your payroll. I have obviously a third party because I'm smaller, but they come in and they check to make sure my backup's working all the time. I have double recovery methods. I have several online backup companies, not just one. I pay for two, and I have a hard copy where every day somebody's taking a hard copy of my server or backup tape at home every day. So try to replace your equipment before it crashes. I have a policy in my office that every 3 to 4 years I'm getting rid of all of my computers and replacing them. Obviously, I'm hiring a company that can wipe my computers and give me a certification that they're destroying my hard drives. So that's pretty much it in a nutshell for me. Anyway, I know that I have just lightly touched on it, but in a half hour, 20 minutes that I got to talk, you can really go much deeper into almost everything that I talked about today. But I just wanted to highlight how easy it kind of is to go paperless and to stay paperless. So I'm going to stop talking, and I'm going to turn it over to my colleague, Mr. Larry Butterfield. And he's going to be talking about the compliance aspects of going paperless. So yeah, now I'll thanks, turn it over thanks, to you. Laurie. And if I don't change the slide quick enough, just say next.
And yeah, before thanks, Laurie, Larry goes on, I just want to interrupt. Larry, you have 12 minutes left.
Yeah, okay.
Or you have a little bit more on your program.
Yeah. Basically, the disclaimer that Laurie read also covers myself. I'm just going to try to give an overview. There's so many more details that could be discussed in further detail, but with time, it's simply best to go over just some of the basics.
Excuse me. Can I ask a quick question?
No, actually, Marin, could you put your question in the chat box?
Yes, that'll be fine. Thank you. Okay.
Thank you, Marin.
Next, Laurie.
Okay.
The first thing you want to do is develop a privacy statement. This just outlines basically how you're going to protect your company. And by doing that, you're actually protecting the return on your investment because you've just spent a lot of money going paperless with all the technology and all the training. So what outside vendors and compliance people will look for is a privacy statement. And it simply outlines who has access to what, and a very, very simple statement of fact. An outline is usually useful, and be very specific about the rules and regulations that you state for your firm or agency, et cetera. Next, Lori. Cybersecurity is an issue. If you read any newspaper, New York Times, Wall Street Journal, every week there's something in there. We heard last week about the pipeline, Colonial, that was hacked by the Russians. And I don't know if you've been to the gas pump recently, but here in Louisville, we're already about 30 or 40 cents higher for gas prices covering that. So this is a very serious situation. And basically what they want is what I'll refer to as a treasure trove of information. And you see on the list what they want. They want your case litigation strategy, your settlement parameters, confidential client information, attorney-client communications, any intellectual property, personal identifiers, and that's anything from any passwords that you have, et cetera, and then, of course, payment information. Ransomware is out there. Colonial got it as well. A year or two ago, they were targeting hospitals. And this hacking can be anything from a 13-year-old female in Nebraska to somebody in Somalia to somebody in China to the hackers in Russia. When you're vulnerable, they obviously look for the weak spot in your organization. And that may also not only be within your organization, but with your vendors. Experian got hacked because of a vendor. They came through the back door of a vendor, and the tech people had advised management there. But as Lori said, of going paperless, management was the biggest obstruction. It was the same with Experian. They were arrogant. They didn't believe. But let me tell you, folks, the FBI previously indicated that everyone in the United States, or there was a hack every 3 seconds in the United States. They have now downgraded that to every 2 seconds in the United States, somebody's information is hacked. So if you're not protecting yourself, you'll be on the list soon. Next, Lori. You also, when you accept information from your clients, you have a legal and ethical obligation to protect that information, especially the law firms. And it's also true for agencies. It's very important that you take this seriously. And there's ways that you can do this, and I'll talk about some of the methods that you can use to protect yourself, to protect this information. Next, Lori. For all attorneys, I'm sure you're well aware that ABA Model Rule 1.6C requires a lawyer shall make a reasonable effort to prevent the inadvertent or unauthorized disclosure of or unauthorized access to information relating to the representation of a client. Many states have weighed in on this issue, California being one of the earliest, and that came from an attorney's use of a, quote, private laptop at home, but he was doing law firm work there. Very, very careful, very, very serious thing. You need to Google your state bar, find out what their regulations are, and adhere to those guidelines, so you're at least safe. And then, you know, even if you do all these things, it doesn't prevent a hack, but it does prevent a hack. but it will make it more difficult, and the mitigating damages will be less because you'll be able to identify it quicker. Next, Lori. The legal response, covered entities required to have data security plan. So if you don't have one, you need to look up what it is. A lot of the language comes from the Graham, Leach, Biley inspired safeguard rules. Everybody knows if they do any international work now, what the safeguards are. If you become compliant through some of the CPA firms that represent you, you know what this safeguard rules and language are. Even if you're not going to do that, I would suggest you look up the bill and take a look at and see what they say the safeguard rules are. You may be able to implement some of them for your law firm or your agency without a full-blown report. Many states have enacted statutes. Go back, Lori, would you? Many states have enacted statutes to protect personal identifiable information to citizens. Some of the first were Nevada in 2008, Massachusetts in 2009. But again, check with your state bar to make sure that you're on course here and protecting that information. Because in my business, I serve summonses. It's a small industry. And if we do something untowards and let somebody hack in, we're done. We'll start losing clients left and right. I move over 1 million documents a day. Upwards of some busy days, we're close to 2 million documents a day. So I know how to protect that information and make it as secure as possible. Next, Lori. Don't fall asleep at the switch. What I mean here is, if you're updating your security every time you have an audit, you're going to get hit. This is something that has to be part of your weekly meeting, surely your monthly meeting, where you're updating and looking at things. For instance, if you have a server in your office, that's easily hackable, not only from outside, but inside. If you're in the cloud, for instance, the cloud company that we park our data in has 25 people searching the web, the dark web, and the deep web for threats. And we get updates sometimes 2 and 3 times a day. Again, it's just something that will keep you safe. And there's plenty of cloud companies out there. That's the wave of the future, ladies and gentlemen. So if you're not there, I would encourage you to start looking. I'm not touting the cloud, but I think you need to take a hard look at that because it surely will protect you. Because even if you have a fairly good sized law firm, how many people are you employing to search for these threats on a daily basis? Next, Lori. In 2009, the FBI advised law firms are targets of cyber criminals. I think it's obvious why. They have information, and information is king. Whether it be some of the information that is being shared using artificial intelligence today. For instance, when COVID broke out, the Chinese approached the state of Washington and offered to build as many testing facilities in the state of Washington free of charge as the state wanted, for one reason, so they could mine the data. They had the DNA and they would mine that data, which they are currently doing now. And if you're signed up with any of these ancestry.coms or any of those that check your ancestry, I can tell you your data is already sitting on the Chinese supercomputer. So it is very, very serious. Usually foreign-based. We all know the stories of the election hacks from the Russians. the Chinese are much smarter about this. The Africans are very, very aggressive, but it also can be some, like I said, teenager in Nebraska looking to have some fun, and then $30,000 or $40,000 later, you're on the hook. In 2012, one of the cybersecurity experts wrote an article, "When Good Enough Isn't," and explains that even though you think you're covered, there's always new threats out there, people coming up with different strategies to attack. And I'm going to explain a little bit about one of the things you can do to thwart a threat. One of the hacks is called spear phishing. And that's where the hacker targets you and sends you a link and asks you to click on the link. It's a familiar link that you may know. And they ask for your username and password. Once they have that, they can get all sorts of data from you. So I would suggest you use a two-factor authentication procedure, similar that you use with your local bank. When you access your online bank, they ask you for a code. You put in a code. It pings your phone. You put in a second code, and you know. So what this does, the two factors, it allows you to see who has come in and where they are, what their name is. And if they're trying to log into you to hack, at least you have a way of identifying who they are. And I would highly recommend that wherever you can go to the two-factor authentication, that you go ahead and consider that. And that's one thing you can ask your IT people when you're setting up your system. Next, Lori. The percentage of firms not using cybersecurity measures. Again, almost 90% don't use the two factors. Almost 80% don't use encrypted messages. Same amount for don't automatically encrypt emails. A little bit less don't encrypt laptops. Don't use any laptop tracking technology. Don't have intrusion detection. And then don't have intrusion prevention. So these are important things to look at, and the slide will be available in the package. But these are the sort of things you should look at to see how vulnerable you are in each of these issues, and then plan how you're going to attack each of those and prevent somebody from coming in. And then if they do come in, what are you going to do about it? How are you going to prevent them from gaining additional information? And but the first part is obviously the identification. Next, Lori. This is all about focus. Like I said, if you're waiting for the audit to upgrade your security system, you're in trouble. These people come up with different ideas all the time. They're very, very skillful in preying on not only individuals, but companies. When I ran my collection agency, I went paperless in 89 or 90. And I got an email from an attorney that I used all the time. But the line explaining what the email was about looked to be garbage. And since I was pretty new to the computer game back then, being of a certain age, if you will. I opened the email thinking I need to see what it is and then contact the attorney and tell him, you know, there's something wrong. What it was is a brand new virus that came out that day. The first day, it shut down my server twice. The second day, it shut down my server four times. By the end of the week, I had the network people pointing to the hardware people, and I finally told both of them, I don't care who it is, I need a solution. $80,000 later, and all new, that's including all new server and individual laptops, I was ready to go again. Luckily, I had my backup done. So, you know, you have to be extremely careful and aware. Next, Lori.
Larry, I'd like to interject. You have about 10 more minutes left.
Yep, we're close. So data leakage and data theft. A lot of times this comes not only from external sources, but internal sources. And it may be that they're misusing the communication. I would strongly recommend that you consider encrypting your messages. It gives you a level of protection. And you need to seek out webinars, seminars, et cetera, and give your employees meaningful education. If you're simply sitting there and saying, we need to follow these policies and there's no explanation, somebody may turn you off or not be paying the type of attention you need to pay to these details. And again, get your policies in writing so people can review them from time to time. If somebody is misusing something, that's a teachable moment where you can indicate that these are the policies. I go so far as every employee signs a document indicating that they know our standard operating procedures, have read them, understood them, and will follow them. Next, Lori. That's about it. I can't impress upon you enough of the seriousness of this. This is simply a simple overview of what's going on. I will give you one website to visit to see if your phone or your email has been hacked. It is, you can Google this, have I been pwned.com. Have I been, and then capital pwned.com. And that will tell you not only if you've been hacked, but how they hacked you. And a lot of this will come from social media. If you're on Facebook or any of those other sites, or you use social media a lot, they wait until you may have used this site four times 10 years ago. And it's dormant, but they have a way of getting in through those sites and obtaining your information. So it may not even be something you use more than once or twice, but they have ways of hacking in through that. So that's basically what I have to share. And Lori and I would answer any questions.
Larry, before we go on, you want to give your last prompt?
Yes.
That was your first prompt.
I know, but I have a statement with this one.
Okay.
Paraphrasing Muhammad, I hope your paperless experience floats like a butterfly and the hackers don't sting you.
You want to repeat that so everybody can write that down?
I'd like to paraphrase Muhammad. I hope your paperless experience floats like a butterfly and the hackers don't sting you like a bee.
Wait, is there any questions that we can answer? We have like maybe less than 5 minutes.
I believe Marianne had a question earlier on. Marianne, do you want to unmute yourself? Don, could you just unmute everyone, please?
No, don't unmute everyone.
Well, that's a mistake.
Excellent presentation, guys. Thank you so much. And Laurie, my question was, I thought you said you had two offsite backup companies or systems, and you also had a tape drive, maybe that you took the tape out, whatever, every day or every week. Is that correct?
I do. When I say offsite, it's an online thing. So one of them is Mosey Pro. So basically, I think it's like every 2 hours or every hour, this company is in my server and it's backing up every 2 hours. So I have actually two companies that do that, just in case something happens with Mosey Pro. There's another one, and my IT guy just set up the second one. And then I have my paralegal every day take a hard drive backup tape out of my server and home, just in case, you know, the place burns down or something like that, and my server gets fried.
I think that's smart. Thank you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Great presentation, Laurie and Larry. I have some questions for you. Laurie, you mentioned that you have a server. You keep everything on a server. Is it on the cloud or is it local?
No, I particularly have a local one in my office. My server has redundant drives, which obviously for people who know IT or computer, and I've learned this as I've been going on, is that each drive is like terabyte. I mean, has amazing amounts of storage on it. But if one hard drive gets fried, there's like three redundant ones in my server. So I haven't actually gone to the cloud. So I guess I'm one of those bad people that Larry should be beating me with a wet noodle, but I haven't done that.
Well, basically,
my IT guy makes sure that I have firewalls and everything in place, and he checks it all the time.
Well, at my company, we do business in the East Coast, and we also do business in Hawaii. So I actually back up 20 times a day, believe it or not.
I'm constantly backing up.
Larry, I have a question. If your stuff is on the cloud, but after 90 days, isn't it accessible by the federal government without a warrant?
Yes, I believe so. And Joe, in addition to being in the cloud, I also have a silo. So if somebody hacks into the cloud company, they have to hack into my silo. And by the way, the silo is not called Specialized Attorney Services. It's called something else. And say it's St. Mary's Church. If you hack into St. Mary's Church in the silo, you will see the bylaws of the church for about 25 pages. However, if you hack in and start reading those pages, when you get to about 15, we send a virus back to you to start eating the information. And we have... Yes. Only three people have keys that stop the scroll.
That's great.
Larry, can you explain what the silo means? What you mean by a silo?
In the cloud, if you're in the company, you are grouped in with everybody else in the entire system. But you pay a little bit more and you get what is called a silo. And your information is actually segregated from everyone else. And it's a simple, you know, like a separate standalone data source.
So how would that work if you have 25 pages?
I'm going to call my wife.
What it would work is, so to see the silo, say you hacked into the cloud company, you wouldn't find me there. So you start searching and you happen to see, say, St. Mary's Church, and you start reading, you're hacked in and you found the silo, then you start reading the information. The data is not at the top. In other words, you don't see any of our data for 25 pages.
Okay.
And we have a code that stops us. When we get in, we put a code in and it stops the scroll.
Okay. And would that also work if it was... if the federal government tried to obtain your information without a search warrant?
Yes.
Okay. All right. And does anybody else have any other questions? Okay. Oh, Larry, before we go, can you repeat that one or can you put it in the chat box with the actual website if you've been hacked?
Yeah, if you Google it, just Google "Have I been," and then it's all caps PWNED.com, and it will give you a little.
Is that ever an N as in Nancy?
PWNED.com, and it will ask you for identifier. You either put your phone number or your email, and it will give you the information. It will not only tell you if you've been hacked, it will tell you what vehicle they use to hack you.
When you enter a phone number, you have to enter it in an international way, so you have to put the +1 in front of the area code.
No.
Yeah, no. You do. I just really? Did it. Yeah, I just did it, and they said enter it in the international format.
Okay.
So you got to, if you're in the U.S., you have to put a +1 in front of the area code.
Did anybody hack you?
Nope, I'm clean.
Good. You're off social media then. You're not heavy on social media. That's no. Sure.
All right. Well, it looks like if there isn't any more other questions, we're going to.